Welcome once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. We help business creators like you win at the game of business and marketing so you can thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion and make a difference for your community, market, and audience. Please take a moment and visit our website, www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. You'll find hundreds of episodes covering a breadth and depth of topics relevant to you as a business creator, and links to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. And now, here's today's episode. Let's get started.
My name is Adam Homey. I am your host, and I am honored by your wise decision to tune in and invest in yourself today. Once again, the Business Creators Radio Show comes to you from my sumptuous Las Vegas balcony, where I have this beautiful view of a pine tree in front of me that overlooks the park, and I'm enjoying the very cool 99 degree temperature that we had the day that we put this all together. So we have sort of a from the field feeling here, and as the listener, we want you to feel like you are tuning in on a private mastermind session. So get out your pad of paper and your two pens and be sure to capture those aha moments. It'll give you the slight edge in your own business. What we're going to cover today is getting for you a process for scaling online with digital events. We get a lot of questions about how do I create digital events? How do I do this virtual events? With all these changes as to whether or not we can have live events again, should we go live again? Should we have digital? Should we go hybrid? Info products, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And to help us sort through some of this stuff today, we have with us Israel Duran. Let me just tell you about him. He's a business consultant, speaker, and trainer in the four pillars of business that he specializes in: branding, marketing, sales, and operations. In less than 7 years, he's built several businesses and empowered thousands of purpose-driven entrepreneurs worldwide. He trains visionaries on how to leverage their expertise and knowledge to create profitable businesses that impact individuals, businesses, and the world. So there is so much more to learn about him. You can find out about it at our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. Just go to the episode for Israel Duran. And he's also going to tell us a bit more about his journey in just a moment. So Israel, come on in. The weather's fine.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I appreciate your intro there. And I mean, unfortunately, I'm in Connecticut. So here in this side of the country, things are a little bit more cooler. But now we are in the summer. So I was just in Vegas. So I can definitely raise my hand to the feeling you're having now.
Oh, yes, yes. It's like sticking your head in an oven and leaving it there.
Yes, yes.
You know, it's a funny thing, and this is something that may be instructional for some of our listeners. You go to Tony Robbins events, and then you go to some of these other events where they'll put out the hot coals for you to walk across. And you hear the stories about people who are able to walk across the coals without getting any injury. And without getting any injury at all, because you're not supposed to get injured. And then there are those who get burned really bad. Well, understanding a bit about Las Vegas at the height of summer can be instructional. On hot summer days in Las Vegas, they say the average temperature of a sidewalk in Las Vegas is somewhere around 160 degrees. You know what else is about 160 degrees? Those hot coals at those events. They're not smoldering hot. They're hot, but they're not that kind of hot. You don't hear a lot of stories about people getting burned just walking down the street here in Las Vegas. Reason why is because they keep walking. To not get burned on the hot coals, you're supposed to keep walking. You're not supposed to take selfies.
Yeah.
That's how people get burned.
That's a good analogy there, my brother.
I love to point that out. One of my personal crusades is that selfies kill. There are entire websites that track selfie-related fatalities and severe injuries. Wow. More people, and in 1 year, I can't remember what year it was, more people died of selfies than shark attacks.
Wow.
No. And if anybody ever sees a selfie of me, believe me, it was Photoshopped. There may have been a couple of me from back in the day. I've gone out of my way to have them suppressed. But anyway, the point is, you keep on walking, you keep going briskly, and you will enjoy the heat without the burn. Before we get into our topic today, and we have so much to cover, first of all, Israel, what we like to do with our guests here is have you tell us a bit about your own journey and what's brought you to where you are today, serving business creators from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion.
Yeah, that's a very good question, Adam. And truly for me, anytime someone asks me this question, I like to pull back the curtain and kind of share with individuals on where I really started. And growing up as a young boy, I made a lot of mistakes, was very rebellious, had actually a speech impediment problem, and I was held back in second grade. And it's funny because now I train the speakers and high quality speakers, but it wasn't always like that for me. And really for me, Adam, growing up, what had me act out that way was the fact that my father had passed away at 29 years old of a massive heart attack. So, you know, growing up, I didn't have my dad in my life, didn't have a mentor, didn't have that father figure to kind of lead me and give me clarity on, you know, who I was and what I was supposed to do. And the reason I talk about that is because a lot of people see our success today and they don't really know where we started. So I love to share with people that, you know, I didn't have everything handed to me. It was hard and I had to make a lot of mistakes and I had to develop at a young age very fast. And I'm very thankful for it because now I have the privilege of, you know, mentoring visionaries. Many of them are under between 40 and 65, and I pour into their lives. And I don't think I would have been prepared to do what I'm doing now if I didn't go through what I went through as a boy. And you know, fast forward, you know, from my upbringing, I actually had a life death experience. I actually, instead of COES, for me, it wasn't COES. It was actually the water. I actually drowned at the age of 7. I was clinically dead, actually, for a few minutes, and my soul came inside of my body. And the experience that I had is I was going to where God was, and all of a sudden my I'm back into my body, but I see an arm that pulls me out of this water, and I turn around to see who it was to find out, you know, the man that jumped in to save me, and there was nobody there to be found. And that was the moment, Adam, where I discovered that something was watching over me, but more importantly, that I had a purpose on earth and I wasn't alive because of a coincidence. And I didn't know at the time that my purpose was connected to people in business in part, but then slowly after I started growing up, I discovered that my passion and my purpose was in entrepreneurship. And like I said before, supporting visionaries. But I share that story just to give people clarity on my background and my history, really.
Right. And, you know, excuse me, I think a lot of people don't recognize the extent to which the information they had growing up and what that was given to them is part of the reason that they're held back today. And there's no blame for that. So it's not really worth it to, I mean, I know in your case, unfortunately, you lost your father when you were very young. But there are folks out there who say, well, you know, my parents lied to me. And my parents did this, my parents did that. And what you have to recognize is that they, in most cases, did the best they could based on the information they had. If you want to understand this better, I encourage people to do studies of inherited trauma and resonance repatterning. When you understand those two disciplines, you'll see how that same argument you're having with your significant other, your spouse, or your friend, or your parent, or your child today happened 100 years ago in your family with one of your great grandparents involved. And it was probably the same argument over the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Because we model consciously or otherwise what we know. And sometimes we don't even recognize the things that are planted very subtly. So here's an example I love to give. When I was, and listeners, just, you know, stay tuned. You're going to get so much about digital events. It's going to blow your mind, but let's tell a story first. When I was growing up in school, we were given an exercise. We had to answer the question, and it was worded as follows. If you won $1 million in the lottery today, what would you do with the money? Does that question seem innocuous to you?
No, that's seems, get you to think.
Yeah, it's if you know that you're supposed to think about it. But if you're a kid, you don't recognize what's going on. I mean, on the surface, it seems like an innocent question. If you won $1 million in the lottery, what would you do with it? Well, I did my assignment, and I was one of the ones who found out very quickly that the only acceptable answer was to make a list of everybody you'd give all the money away to, and you had to give away every dime of it. And the way I was thinking, I can't remember if it was the third or the fourth grade or whatever it was, I was already thinking about compound interest, and I was thinking about how to make the money work for me so that I could have the freedom to do the type of work that I actually wanted to do in my life rather than hold down a job just for the income. I didn't express it in quite those words, but the thought process was already there. But no, I had to make a list of everybody that would give it away to, have it add up to $1 million. They weren't even counting that you lose half of it in taxes before you even get it, and be as broke as you were when you started. Also, there's the way the question is worded. If you won $1 million in the lottery, so you can't be successful and earn $1 million, you can't have a business that generates $1 million, you can't have a career that leads to you getting paid $1 million. The only way that you can get it there, little child, is if you win it by chance in a lottery. So in other words, you were designed to be poor. You're intended to be poor. And if ever you see success, it's because of some blind random statistical luck.
Yeah.
It tells you that the only way you're ever going to have a chance, because those things don't happen for you, is if it just happens by some weird lightning bolt from the sky. So with all that, and this is why I share these stories, I want people to recognize that sometimes these little subtleties that were planted in them, and maybe the people planting it didn't even realize what they were doing because they themselves had received the transmission subconsciously without it surfacing to their conscious realization. I went to a Catholic school, so my teacher was a nun. She probably wasn't thinking in terms of creating wealth for generations when she had us do that assignment. She probably had to do the assignment herself when she was a kid. So I don't know. But when we recognize these little things, we can begin to surface some of the very subtle barriers and begin to reframe our relationship with success. And if that's one thing that I can do through this show and through my teachings, is try and pay it forward. So Israel, I'm very inspired by, you know, your story of how your experience with drowning and seeing some of the things, the way the hand reached in and pulled you out, and that you were shown these messages that inspired you to become a wedge point for the success of others. That's one of the reasons I'm very happy to have you here today.
Thank you, Adam. And yeah, you bring up a point that a lot of people sometimes miss, and I want to emphasize it. Systems build wealth, and yes, systems are measurable. And when people aren't shown these simple, really, I mean, what you just said, they should have taught us in elementary school, because it would give people the clarity that it's possible for them. And I love what you said about reframing your relationship with success. You see, I don't think success is by chance, as you're referring to in your story. It's by following proven principles, following a proven process, and building out the numbers. And I love talking about digital events because it's all measurable. You see, there's a lot of people that say, well, Israel, I want to do a digital event and I'm just going to wing it. I'm like, probably not going to work well for you. Or it might, you know, you might do a good job, but how are you going to look at it from an objective perspective and make it better the next time? If you don't have a system, if you don't have a structure, if you don't have a strategy, a syntax, the science that you're following, so you can calculate very predictable, simple shifts that you can make to make it even more profitable in terms of success. So I can't wait to get into that and talk about some of the tactics and techniques that those that are listening can leverage in their business and life.
Yeah, well, let's start working our way toward that. You've mentioned to me the ability to empower entrepreneurs by helping them grow highly profitable, purpose-driven businesses. So as we lay our foundations toward the digital events, let's get into that for a little bit.
Yeah. And three simple steps, really. I help people discover, design, and deliver their gift to the world.
Yeah.
Because as I was taught, I believe that everybody is called to be a leader. And it's instantly what I say that some people might say, well, if everybody's called to be a leader, well, then who's called to follow? And that instantly shows that what we know about leadership has been tainted in our system, right? Leadership is not just having power over people or control over people. That's truly not what leadership is. Leadership is self-discovery. And when you discover what's in you, when you discover your gifts, your talents, your expertise, the things that you're good at, the things that you're called to use to make someone else's life better or solve a certain problem in this earth, when you discover that and you start to go after that and you start to serve, that's why I love entrepreneurship and I love entrepreneurs, because I believe entrepreneurs are changing the world and they will continue to change the world. Business creators, and as you know, this radio show, business creators, right? When you create, it's that authenticity, it's that love, it's that intentional process of creating a solution. And I believe that when you go after your gifts and you go after self-discovery and you start to take action on that, it creates inspiration and people see that inspiration in you. And that's what will then inspire them to follow you or to be inspired by you to then take action in their life and then create a ripple effect of influence. So I love helping people get clarity, because when you give someone clarity through discovery, they're able to then increase their confidence to then communicate their value to the marketplace. And this is what, again, they should have taught us in elementary school. But what they did is they drowned it. They hid it. They got us into the test-taking mindset of, hey, study this, take this test, and you'll be successful. But in reality, what they were doing, because the educational system in America was not created for you to create a business. It was created for you to be an employee.
Servants of the state.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, that's what I love. Just the name of it, business creators, and in your programs, Adam, is so amazing, because what it does, it allows people to be innovative and allows them to have the mindset of solution and not of being employed, rather being right. Deployed.
Employed rather than deployed. Oh, I'm going to have to write that one down. We might have to make a meme about that one. That's really good. All right. So yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And, you know, I got the same thing. Study hard, do well on the tests, blah, 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 blah. So I had those high grade point averages. And, you know, nobody these days asks me what my grade point average was. In fact, when people ask me where I went to college and I tell them I went to Penn State, they want to know what it was like going to party on game weekends. or they ask if I ever climbed Mount Nittany, or they ask if I have ever toured any of the wineries around there, because they have a lot of wineries in Center County right around State College. It's a pretty big industry there. They don't ask me, you know, did you pull that all-nighter to pass that final? They don't. God, no. No, they don't. And I guess I figured this out while I was at Penn State. They make you take all these general education courses in college, which to me is like high school all over again. They should have covered this already. And while I'm trying to take some classes in my major, I have to take this class in geology. Now, I, by this point, understood that there was a difference between your overall GPA and your major GPA. And the major GPA is the one they cared about when you went for, when you put it on your resume to get your first job, or if you applied to graduate school. So I decided at one point I was really just going to focus on the major GPA. And as long as the overall was okay, it was okay. So this geology class, not in my major, I decided after the first day of this geology class that I was going to see my way through. You know that expression, see your way through?
Yeah.
You know the expression, see my way through. And now that I knew that I didn't have to struggle to ace the test, because I wasn't even going to try, that I could just enjoy the class. And I ended up getting a pretty good education, which I probably should have had already, but I was getting it now and I had to pay for it, so whatever, about how rain happens, what causes precipitation, what causes droughts, what causes erosion, what causes bodies of water to form and disappear. I had some fun with it. So we get to finals week, and it was actually the last final I had to take. And I And I looked at my, you know, when we were in college, we did our calculations to determine, okay, what do we have to get on this final to get such and such a grade? And I looked at it and I realized that I had to get a 43% on the final to get into the B range. To get an A for the class, I needed a 94. So yeah, I told people this and I over and over got the feedback, but of course you're going to study and you're going to get that 94 because you are a leader. That's why I'm telling the story. You are a leader. I said, no, actually, I'm going to go to the bar tonight and I'm going to show up and I'm going to answer as many questions as I know. And I'm going to put C as the answer to the rest of them. And I'm going to write one sentence for each of the essay questions. That ought to give me 45% or 48 or whatever it was. So I did that, turned it in, got an A minus for the class. Must've been a hell of a curve. In fact, I was probably about the third or fourth person to turn my final in. I handed it to the professor. He picked it up. He flipped through the pages really quick, and he gave me this knowing nod that he knew what I was doing. And then he just smiled and waved, and I left.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I bring that up because it has to do with, I think there's a misconception about leadership on this end. And you know, after this, we are going to get to the digital events because I'm very excited about that. You know, what I love about this whole thing of understanding what it means to be a leader, given your great example, is when you get identified as a leader, now all of a sudden they expect you to be a leader in everything. So you're a leader in business, you're an entrepreneur, that's great. So now it's expected that when you go to church or synagogue or the mosque or what have you, you're expected to be a leader at the ceremonies and in all the committees and stuff. You join the Rotary or the Kiwanis, you're expected to be a leader. You're supposed to volunteer for committees, run for office. And I get to the point, I belong to some of these things. And it's like, you know, pass on the committee. I do so much leadership everywhere else. I just want to be the guy that shows up for the parties. You're going to get my money that'll fund whatever you need to do. But I don't want leadership. I want somebody else to have that opportunity to be leadership. And where, you know, by that term of leadership means you have an elected position. My version of leadership when it comes to these things is as much as possible making positive contributions that raise the level.
Yes.
That's all I want.
Yeah, no.
Somebody's got to do that. Somebody's got to be the person who just shows up for the parties. Somebody has to do that. Just like in life, somebody has to be the bench warmer.
Yeah. No, to confirm what you're saying, that's why leadership is all about a certain area of gifting.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about being the jack of all trades, master of none. You got to master a certain area of gifting. And that's why it's not over people. You see, we have a misconception of leadership in general, just because of really realistically, and not to get political here, but because of politicians.
Yes.
You know, throughout the whole world, not just globally. I'm really talking globally now, especially in the country that my parents are from, the Dominican Republic. There's a lot of corruption and different things.
Sure.
And that's typically seen in third world countries. And I don't even like to use that phrase third world, but I use it because most people know the they associate that to the countries I'm referring to.
Yeah.
But it's about specialization. That's really what it comes down to. Like what your area of leadership is the area of specialization that you want to focus on. And that's why you mentioned synagogue. That's why the Hebrew people have typically, you see this a lot in cultures, where they specialize. And I love the Jewish people, by the way, not because my name's Israel, just because I have a lot of friends that are Jewish.
Sure.
But, you know, it's the wisdom of specialization. When you look at a general doctor generates about $175,000 in the U.S. after 14 years of study. And they on average invest about $250,000 in their education. For me, that's not a very good ROI, but I thank God for doctors. My mother's a doctor in the Dominican Republic. But a neurosurgeon generates about 3 to 4 times that, about the same investment, sometimes a little less. Because why? They specialize just on the brain. So in business, and especially when we're going to talk about events here, I love to encourage people to specialize with a certain area of their target market or niche, because when they specialize, they instantly set themselves apart. And we've been taught, because of society and the culture, that you got to be the jack of all trades to master nothing. And I kind of love to work with specialists. And actually, it's part of our teaching. Like we tell people, you need to specialize. You need to become the neurosurgeon.
Uh-huh. Exactly. I was classified as gifted in school, and it was assumed because I was gifted in some subjects, I was gifted in everything. I was never any good at mathematics, like algebra, trigonometry, geography. I can't solve an isosceles trapezoid for Y. And in fact, I believe that analogy deserves to be taken out and shot based on what little I know. I struggled in this. I spent almost all my time on it. Meanwhile, I had other courses that I really wanted to spend more time on, but I was acing them, and therefore, oh, that's just more time you can spend trying to figure out math. What's wrong with you? What's so hard about math?
Yeah.
I already knew at that point there was nothing I was going to do that was going to involve measuring shapes or doing magic with numbers. It was going to be my vocation in life. Taxes, hire an accountant. Build something? Yeah. Well, I know how to use a slide rule and that triangle thing to create angles. I can build a set of steps without understanding all this math stuff. I learned from my dad. He taught me how. So it was suggested that I be taken out of the gifted program and reduced to general courses for all my other stuff, the stuff I actually enjoyed, so I could spend more time figuring out this math stuff after I was already spending 90% of my time studying it, taking advantage of every teacher's office hours, private tutors, you name it, for something I freaking hated. I wasn't designed to do math. When I created my venture in 2003, the first thing I did was find a really great CPA.
Yeah.
Even before I looked at hiring a virtual team, first thing I did was get a CPA, because I knew that the number piece is something I was never going to master. It was something that was going to vex me. So I found somebody who is not only a great CPA, but somebody who loves being a CPA, like geeks out on it.
Yes.
And that's the guy I need by my side. And
yes, sir.
And he can, and he's taught it to me enough that I understand it theoretically, but I could never do those forms.
You bring up a great point. And you know, this whole thing about launching events, digital events, really
let's go with that. Let's do it.
Yeah, it has to do with leadership. And I just want to emphasize what you're saying, because part of leadership is identifying things that I'm good at and things that I need to delegate. And that delegation and duplication, again, going back to what we said originally, it helps create systems and processes and KPIs so you can know how to truly grow a sustainable business and not just winging it. So I always encourage people as a leader, as a visionary, you know, we have about roughly 14 people on our team. Yeah. I tell people, look, there's things that I don't want to do, right? Like I delegate because I can focus on doing something else that I love to do and I'm good at it and I'm a master in it and I'm still growing in it, but I'm a specialist in the area. Whereas I can go delegate the other things with my other team members and they're specialists in their area. And now we help each other. So part of leadership is also recognizing that your potential as a leader is dependent on other people that you partner with. And I encourage people with this, those leaders out there, that the first step of leadership, and this you won't hear it in a book, the first step of leadership is to find your replacement and begin training them.
Wow. If more politicians did that, we might have better government.
Yes.
Yeah. So let's get into this now. By digital events, let's just be clear on the terminology. You're referring to virtual seminars, webinars, live streams, things like that, or are we thinking about something different?
No, you hit it right on the head. I typically say live digital events because you are there live. There are people that do telegrams and they pre-record it and that's like a webinar. But I like to be live when I'm doing online digital events because I like to have that real time connection. And primarily, I believe it makes a difference in terms of the audience and their connection.
I think it does too. And you know, this is something that a year and change ago we were thrown into. In fact, I had a client who was in the process of filling a live in-person event, and he was forced by events to switch it to a live virtual event where it was going to be a one-day seminar in California where they traveled to his location and did it in a conference center, and it had to become a Zoom event. And some of the things where we got our real-time learning were, I'll give you the biggest example, is how to properly position the offer that you were going to make in the room to encourage people to join the mastermind.
Yeah.
And we discovered real quickly, oh, that's not so easy in the digital world.
No, it's not.
Okay. So this is actually burning question number one from our listeners. Cause I've heard this from a few people who knew you were going to be here. when you are in person in a seminar and you make the pitch to have people join the mastermind, you normally do that right before lunch. You usually precede that by having some of your existing mastermind members come up and do a panel presentation where you talk about the joys of the mastermind. Then you go through your deck, and a good deck normally takes about 20, 30 minutes to really get all the NLP and such in. And then you immediately go to lunch after you have the after you create the back of the room rush. So people run to the back of the room, they grab those first 10 spots to get the extra coaching sessions with them. And then the people who have questions, you just hang out in the room with them during lunch and you convert some more during lunch. Now, in the virtual world, you have no way of corralling people like that. And then how do you keep people looking at their screen rather than going off and doing something else when what they're, what we're supposed to be doing is having them in the environment to think about joining the mastermind? Some things that other in-person events do is they'll cater lunch that day, and that'll be like a special bonus for attending. It's like, hey, we bought lunch for you. Surprise! Because they all want you to go and be in the same place so they can keep talking about the mastermind while you're eating.
Yeah.
You don't have that virtual. So let's go with question number one with the bullet is, how do you do the conversions to get people to take the next investment step with virtual and digital events?
Well, that's a great question. It really depends on what you're offering on the back end and how long the actual event is. Primarily right now, we run 9 different events, the top 3 being a challenge, webinar, or a masterclass. That's really what's really hot right now.
Yeah.
We have many clients that do, you know, 6 to 7 figures in just 3 to 7 days. And not exaggerating, those numbers are low. You know, and we have testimonies and all the proof to show it. But I share that because sometimes when we talk about events and we talk about the revenue that's generated, people sometimes can't perceive how that revenue is generated. But if you have 100 people or 1,000 people that sign up for your event and 50 people raise their hand for a $1,000 product, that's a 50K day, right? Or 50K week. So to answer your question, it's really dependent on variables, but I'll go ahead and answer the question for in specifics based on a 3-day event.
Right.
Because a 3-day event is primarily what we've been seeing.
Yep.
And primarily when we're doing a challenge event, which is really hot right now, or a masterclass, I typically recommend our students to close on day 2, because on day 2, they're already seasoned on day 1. They already have some clarity into what you do. They have seen testimonials. They have heard you, right? You're properly positioned in front of them. And on day 2, they're excited. They're coming back in there. Typically, we leverage Facebook groups at really the highest level to nurture the community group. We have a Facebook group of about 250,000 people that has grown organically, and we teach our clients to do the same. But simultaneously, when you're running a virtual event, you're using Facebook as the community backend. It helps with that engagement, and it helps build that community. So then on day 2, right before you do what we call a raffle offer, because we like to give raffles out each day, and in order for people to win the raffle, they have to actually be live during the raffle to even win. So what we typically do is leave a raffle on day 2, have them listen to our pitch close after the training on day 2, and then we open it up to the raffle. So the people that want to win the raffle hear the pitch, and a great percentage of those individuals actually raise their hand for the actual offer.
Ooh. Because you
give them a no-risk opportunity. If money was no concern, do you think that this program that will do XYZ would make a difference in your life? And people are like, well, no brainer. And then when you give them the offer and you communicate that it's really, there's no risk here, it's just an opportunity, it's really a no brainer. And you educate them on the cost of them doing nothing, which most salespeople don't miss. They only educate them on, okay, this makes sense, it's X amount, you should invest because you're going to get this, 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 and that. What I teach our clients and our students to do is to educate them in that process of, if this person went through this training and they didn't take any action, I want them to know that it's going to cost a minimum an extra $1 to $2.3 million in the next 3 years without them taking action. Because then when they see my offer, that's a significant of a smidgen, they're going to say, you know what? If I don't invest, I'm going to pay a lot more than this. And I hope that answers the question, but
well, folks,
that was me pulling back the curtain.
Well, folks, for our listeners, this is the reason why you need to subscribe to the Business Creators Radio Show on your favorite network. Download this one and listen to it again. Israel just basically gave you a checklist of things to include in your offer. Pressure points, pain points, persuasion points is my preferred term, that encourage people to recognize the value of taking up on this investment today. And what I also love is the whole raffle thing. You know, some folks may say, okay, well, here comes the pitch. I'm going to go in the kitchen and make lunch. Now I'll come back. But if there's a raffle that they could win, that thing that otherwise would have caused them to say, well, I'm not actually buying this today, so I'm out of here. They'll stick around just to see if they win the raffle. So at least now you have the chance to have the conversation with them and show them something that they weren't thinking when their initial thought process just shut down the very idea they would even invest.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I really love that. So the idea is they have to actually attend the pitch to win the raffle.
Yes.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
Yes. So, and what I typically, and this is another one, people are going to probably, why is this guy giving this thing away here? Because value. I love doing this. This is high. This is if you want to close minimum 100K to seven figures and more, really, in just a 3 to 5 day event. This is what I really like to do this. Instead of showing them their offer, because most people, when they go into an event, they're like, they already know a pitch is coming. They're like, okay, I know the pitch is coming.
Well, duh. They're smart business people. They know there's a pitch, you know, business person to business person. In fact, you're not making them a pitch. They're already familiar with the whole, they're doing me a disservice by not offering me an opportunity. So granted.
Exactly. What I love to do is throw a curveball. And this is not something I do normally, but I do it at specific events. And I teach our students to do the same. So you position the offer, you give them amazing, you give them so much that they're like, oh my goodness, this guy's giving me, or this girl's giving me so much here. You overwhelm them with goodness, but with simple steps that's valuable to them. Then when the time comes to do a pitch, you don't do a pitch. You do an application close. Why? Because that's what universities do. They have to apply. Like for us in our brand, I have a sales staff. People have to apply to work with us. We choose who we work with. Same thing that does Yale, same thing Penn State does. You have to apply. So when you apply, the people that only see the pitch are the people that apply. So that way you detract everybody else that's just there to try to see the pitch, but they just want to really see what you're doing and they really don't have an intention to buy. You have them first apply, and then those that apply will actually see the pitch. That way you gauge their intention up front. And this works very well in a short day event. And even the long day event as well, in terms of high ticket programs, like this has to be at least a $5,000 up to that, you know, even a $25,000 program, that this works very well.
You know, I like that. Now that I think of it, this just reminded me that the very first entrepreneurial mastermind I ever belonged to, it was called the UBBI, although I cannot remember what those letters stood for. And I joined it in 2007. I'm reminded now, I attended an event. And they did an application close there. They didn't take any money in the room. They just had people apply. So it was to my great surprise that 3 days later, they contacted me and had a conversation with me. And then I heard from them the next day after that. And they said, we think you would be a great candidate for our platinum level. So they weren't trying to juice me on VIP, which they knew I couldn't afford. And they knew I wasn't developed enough in business to partake of anyway. But they not only made me an offer, but they made me a tailored offer based on a conversation, the application and the conversation. And and at the point, I didn't have any money, so I didn't know how I was going to pay for it, but I said yes anyway. And I more than made my money back off of it, so I was happy.
Yes. And what you said is so critical. And the leaders that are listening to this and the visionaries that are listening to this, that's why we want to ask questions in an event.
Yeah.
You'll never see me at a live event and I ask questions. Like I ask questions every other 5 minutes because I want to make sure that I'm gauging the audience and seeing where they're at, because we're really there to serve them and help them, right? Like we're just not there looking to speak in the wind and, you know, no, we're there to connect with the audience, relate to them, give them clarity, give them value in whatever solution that you have, whether it be health, finance, fitness, education, family, whatever it is. Connect with the audience, see where they're at, make sure that they're assimilating and understanding the information, because then you'll get a better gauge even when you close, right? Or even when you create the pitch and you give them a call to action. So I love what you said there, because it just confirms that it worked. That's why I love the application close, because it's something that's tailored to the individual and not just, hey, this is a shoebox and this shoe fits everybody here.
Right, right. In fact, they made me the offer. They even said, we don't think you qualify for the VIP program because you've only been in business a year. And based on our conversation, your application, we just don't think you're far enough along. You would really benefit from that. So we feel you'd be great for Platinum and would like to see you do that for a year. And at that point, maybe you'll come VIP with us. And I thought, oh, Platinum sounds good. $500 a month. And I'm getting A, B, C, D, and E. And they're going to sit down with me and we're going to draw a map at month one so that I use the program to move me toward a specific goal. Okay. Sounds good to me.
Yes.
Yeah. And that was the feeling that they left me with. It sounds good to me. It sounds like it matches me. Now, to your point, if you just go ahead with the pitch in the room, now you're making assumptions. And what happens when people typically craft pitches is, yeah, you can ask questions during the event itself, and that's all well and good. But if you've already made your slides that have specific dollar amounts and you've trained yourself to use the mouse to create the animations that cross out the $36,000 number and replace it with the 1997 number and all that, then you basically lose your flexibility. But with an application close, you can tailor that however you want because you're not talking money.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. So,
sir, and look, and I adopt one of my biggest distinctions. I want to highlight that is I encourage people to always have a 24/7, especially if they're in a client-based business, coach, consultant, client-based business, to have a access where people can book a call with you or a member of your team 24/7 so they can see how they can work with you. If they find you online, if they find you through an event or through Google, SEO, right? Anything. But I am a big, big proponent of selling one from Melly. Yeah. So the application close is like the highest. Like if you have a high level mastermind, like you said before, it makes sense because you have to tailor it. But if you have a program that's $500 or $1,000, really $1,000 is the sweet point, by the way, for those that are looking for pricing for an online event, for a 3 to 5 day event, $1,000 is really where the sweet spot is at. Greatest conversions there. Or even 1997, selling from the stage. And if you have a tailored audience on the front end, meaning if you do your work to really tailor your marketing on the front end to make sure that you're attracting your ideal market that's perfect for the offer, then it's a win-win. But if you don't know that front end, yeah, you definitely want to stick on the application close because you don't want to offer something to someone that it doesn't even make sense. And if you're marketing your event properly, that shouldn't happen either.
Right. So possibly, and this just occurred to me because I sometimes think about my clients, if they were to do an application close, for example, rather than they, you know, run to the back of the room and give us money close, then maybe they get people who apply to the program that, you know, you can tell they don't belong in a mastermind, but would they give you a premium amount of money to buy your course collection along with a couple use it or lose it calls to help you understand the curriculum? Maybe there are people who prefer to learn on their own. And that could be a way that they could do it that they will never find on your website. And that opportunity will only be there now and they can't come back for it later.
Yes.
I love this.
We do that. We did that primarily. We just had a recent event. We did that. There's a lot of people overseas. Sometimes you get people from overseas.
Yeah.
But they love what you do. You know, they're following you, but they, you know, just don't have the investment. They're just not there. And, you know, we've been known to give them tailored options with, you know, some of our proven programs and very, very reasonable front end, like you were saying, to give them access, right? Because they're there. Right. They want to grow. They're vested. I mean, these are people that would sell their house if they could to invest, but they're looking for that handout. So I think as business owners, we have to be flexible as well and use discernment because it is about passing it forward and bringing an impact globally. So,
right now you mentioned challenges and I love that. Now you're specifically referring to Facebook challenges, that type of model. And let me just add one more element to the question before I turn you loose again. Is Facebook indeed the best platform for those? Or have you ever seen other platforms work well? And I'm asking that question because I know for a fact that a colleague of mine has been wrestling with that.
That's a very good question. We actually run Facebook ads at the highest level, but part what I do is So some of my clients spend on average for per an event in terms of advertising to get their room filled. And right. They have me manage it to fill their events where all they have to do is literally just go in there and present and just focus on their deliverables. And I focus on marketing it and filling their seats if yep. it's an in-person, but primarily we've been doing a lot of online events because of COVID. Facebook is very, very, Facebook is still king. Just over now, Google, over YouTube.
Okay. So we're actually talking about advertising. I was actually asking about the platform on which it conducted, but let's answer the advertising yeah. question. Then no, yeah, no, the other question. Let's do them both.
I'm saying that because I'm going to connect it to groups.
Okay,
the reason why groups are effective, back in 2012, Facebook made a quick switch with the Facebook pages that they actually limit the visibility that people that like your page see your own post. So nowadays, you post a post up on your business page, maybe 2 to 3 people, maybe 200 to 300 people will see it, depending on how many followers you have.
Right.
But because they want you to advertise, but groups are very different. Groups, Facebook will advertise for you for free. We have a group, like I said before, of about 250,000 people that grows about 500 to 2,000 people every single week. How? Because we leverage the algorithm to say, hey, this group has getting great engagement. Put this group in front of more people like the people that are already in the group. So it advertises for free. Why? Because Facebook knows that their longevity depends on user engagement. And that's why they're really pushing groups. So that's why I mentioned the ads to explain why I'm going to suggest with the group, why I'm suggesting the groups.
Just
to give people that full visibility.
Right. Right. So a question that comes up, and I've seen this time and again, is why do we have to attend live streams in a Facebook group? Can't we just have it on Zoom?
That's a good question.
That's usually how I sound when I hear the question asked of me. But this is actually something that a colleague of mine and I have been going back and forth on, because we're trying to find the best answer too. So we're asking you.
Well, here's why efficiency. It comes down to efficiency. Why? Because when you go live from Zoom into a Facebook group, you can do two things. Like, for example, one of our next events, we have a free ticket, a VIP ticket. The VIPs only get access to Zoom. They get access to extra training, Q&A. The general admission, they only see it in Facebook. And when I go live into Facebook, I can get very granular here, but when I go live into Facebook, there's something called guides that you can actually...
Yes.
Yeah, you can actually put those posts inside of the guide so they can act as replays, especially if you have a multi-day event, because someone might not be live, but they might want to watch the replay, that you don't have to then take it from Zoom, upload it to a page, make sure it's up. You don't have to do all that because it's instantly done inside of the Facebook group. And that post then becomes another post that someone can watch in the future to watch the replays under the guides. Do you follow me?
Oh, the guides are awesome. And what I also love about them is like you can set up a guide for day one, day two, day three, et cetera. So we do the same thing.
Yep.
Yeah. So one thing that we found works effectively is when you first set up a guide, the only thing you're going to have at first is for them to click going on the event. And you want people to click going because that generates more algorithms and more reminders. So then you get them to attend, whether it's the live stream or what have you. And then after that is over, you then go to the post that was the live stream and click the little three dots and it'll give you the option that says add to guide. So then you add it to your guide. And at that point, while you're there, you can then add your homework you want them to do to the guide. And what's really awesome about this is Facebook has been doing this thing where it frequently checks when you post something, particularly in groups, and says, we formatted this as a question. Would you like to keep it that way? And you click yes to that. Because if you ask it as a question, Facebook favors that. So you ask your homework. So you have your homework be a question post. More of your group members will see it, whether they attended live or not. And more of them will participate in your homework.
Yes, that's a great distinction there.
Yeah. So
I hope people are writing stuff down.
Yeah. So this is the argument I've been making. And I've said candidly, I'm not a fan of Facebook advertising. I have my reasons for actually despising it, but I will feature guests on this show who will teach it because that's what my listeners want. And I'm not going to allow my personal thoughts on it to impact what other people feel. I know people that do great stuff with Facebook advertising, and I want to celebrate that and I want to help them. I just don't want to do it myself. And I also reserve the right to change my mind on that because I'm a dynamic individual. Anyway.
You know what? I don't blame you. Here's the thing. Facebook algorithm is changing every single day. Yeah. It's AI. I'm on top of it literally every single day. I'm connected to a lot of people in the industry that run ads for people in high level. You mentioned one of the guy's name. Let's just say he has a thing about walking people, you know, letting people walk on coals. And yeah. I'm connected to a lot of people in the industry that run ads, run millions of dollars a month. We run a lot of ads a month. And I've learned a thing or two. But when it comes to online advertising, there's really only two ways that you can generate leads, organically and paid. I believe in both. I believe in both. And I mean, we have some clients that we run ads for and they make money on the front end without even selling anything. And then everything on the back end is generated. Why? Because of OTO offers. And sometimes we have little paid events on the front end. So we have a small, like, for example, we might have a under $20 ticket up front where you're spending on ads, but people are signing up. So you're making some back. And then you have an OTO offer, which is a one-time order, which people that sign up, you offer them, hey, by the way, I have this one-time order opportunity for you here for $27 to $47. And there's a percentage of those people that take that option. So then what it does is it ad sets your ad costs on average, bringing you back one to four of your ad spend. So if you spent $1,000, typically you'll make back $250. But I mean, we have clients that they make money on the front end, like we spend and then they actually make, they're positive on the front end. So on the back end, they have a couple hundred people that they're presenting to for free. And then obviously
I love it. Close.
So it's all a numbers game and it's systems, right? It's like, you got to build that data and then you got to optimize it, right? It's not just theory and guessing. That's typically when people start ads, you know, and I've run ads with a lot of different people, you know, even some high level individuals, their infrastructure is not even built properly. Their segmentation on their ads and their pixels, the pixel and the custom conversions are not set up properly. So they're losing money and then they get a bad result. And then they judge their result based on a bad experience to somebody that didn't know what they were doing set up. So
exactly.
I understand.
Yeah. Yeah. So where I was going with that is all that said, and by the way, for our listeners, when I say that these episodes are like private mastermind experiences, you notice how Israel and I keep interjecting on you. So it's like, ooh. That's how it is when you have a couple great minds bouncing ideas off of each other. Sometimes it just can't wait. And that's what we want you to feel when you are tuning into this. So the reason I brought that up is it's my contention that regardless of your feelings toward any social media platform or any modality, and having tested several, that when it comes to running the challenges, Facebook groups are just the best container right now because of the combination of the guides, the way the algorithms work, and how there are tools there to help you get more engagement that you're just not going to get in a Zoom room.
Yes.
Yeah, we've looked at LinkedIn groups, and LinkedIn groups are good, but they don't necessarily have all of these same things either. So, I mean, if there's another platform out there that has the same tools that Facebook does, then we may recommend it at some point. But for right now, it's just the best one. And for those who say, well, this is so hard, how do I click play on a live stream? And why can't we just be in Zoom? Okay, you're clicking a link to be in Zoom and you're waiting for somebody to admit you. Or you're going into a Facebook group, you're going to the very top of the news feed and clicking the play button or clicking the volume button because it's probably already playing for you. It's the same amount of mouse clicks.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, I'm laughing. I know exactly what you mean.
Right. Right. So, and see, and once you close the Zoom room, the chat is gone. You get a text file that has the chat in it, but they can't keep going back to it. In the Facebook group, people can keep going back to the guides asynchronously 24/7. It'll always be there until you delete it.
Yeah.
That's another distinction.
Just to confirm you that another distinction there is we have found through testing and trends that sometimes people want to leave their group up, but we have found from a conversion standpoint, because we're marketers, right? We test everything. That when you close down the group, you get a better conversion. And even next time when you build up another group, it's a better conversion versus leaving the same group and saying, okay, we're just going to do this next event and we're going to recycle it. I have seen conversions significantly through multiple different accounts by like 3 to 5% more. And for those of you that are marketing, 3 to 5% might not seem like a lot, but that's huge.
3 to 5% is a successful product launch using Jeff Walker's model. I mean, come on, that's good.
Yes, exactly. So I tell people, do a pop-up group. Like, if you're going to do it, close it down after, archive the group. You won't lose. If you want to go back in there, you can go back in there, but at least you archive it, remove the replays. If you want to leave the testimonials there, that's good too. But that way you have that system in place and it's duplicatable and transferable.
Oh, I see. Yeah. See, I really like that. Now there's the argument that if you already have a group with like 3,000 people, do it in the group because people who don't officially sign up for the challenge will show up for the live streams. And, you know, I can't argue that that's necessarily a bad thing. But the more I think about this, Israel, the more I think it's the same as the application close versus the pitch close. You are bifurcating who really wants to be there versus those that are the looky-loos who could end up spinning your wheels.
Yes, and I'll say this to you. I'm not a bad proponent of groups because, like I said, we have a group right now of about 250,000 people. That's our nurturing group. But there's a different purpose for that group.
Exactly.
Pop-up group for an event is a whole nother. You're there to nurture, to convert, and you want to have urgency. You want to let people know that this is not – because sometimes people just want to be around and say, well, I don't really have to join your community, your private community, because I have this private community. No, you want to let them know that, no, this is a pop-up group here. We will be closing out. And if you don't join, you're going to miss out.
Recruit. Okay, so what I'm getting is recruit in the nurturing group. And you can even use the nurturing group to say, hey, we're about to go live in the pop-up group. If you're not already in yet, click here to join the challenge. And now you're doing it. And so now you're actually kind of getting the best of both worlds. Because I can tell you, I belong to a number of groups, and some of them will run challenges. And it's like, oh, I see so-and-so is live again today. It's 10 o'clock, time for their challenge video. Interesting.
Yeah,
am I watching it? No.
Exactly. And if you're in service, having a group is a great, like a client-based business, having a group where you're attracting your target market and then you give free value in that group. And when you do event, you pop that link, hey, make sure you register for the event. That's great because you can convert cold into warm over time. But as Adam was saying, you definitely don't want to continue to reuse the event group because it will hurt your conversions.
Right. Awesome. So we're actually pretty much out of time here. So I know that you've basically just scratched the surface when it comes to digital events, and you have so much more to share. We had that great conversation the first half on leadership principles. I really enjoyed that with you. I think there was some great value for our listeners, and you have given so many aha moments and so many reasons for people to subscribe to the Business Creators Radio Show, go back to this episode and listen to it again from a different place and gain even more learning. But let's wrap up by putting you on the floor one more time and tell us how people engage with you and what they have to look forward to when they do.
Yes. I mean, if you love this content, definitely subscribe to the Business Creators. And if you want more free content as well, you can go to israelduran.com. I have free trainings available for everyone that go more in depth into our 5 S's for launching events and scaling online. Again, that's israelduran.com.
Uh-huh.
And yes, it's been an honor here.
Absolutely. So Israel, thank you so much for being with us once again. It's been an honor, and believe me, an education.
Yes. Thank you.
We trust you enjoyed today's episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. Check out our previous and upcoming episodes on our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. While you're there, be sure to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. Until next time, have a great day. Take care.